Well, when you look at what he contributed over the course of this season, obviously any time you're able to put together an 18-goal campaign, 36 points, obviously he had some semblance of value to the lineup. But, of course, the coaching staff knows that a lot of that is mitigated by the defensive concerns that they have, his play away from the puck. And I think when you step back and look at the Vertanen situation, there's no doubt in my mind that if you were trying to build the best roster on paper, Vertanen would be one of the Canucks' best 12 forwards. But you look at the context of how he's entered training camp, clearly not ready to play. And in that first scrimmage, I mean, fans won't understand because the game wasn't the simulated game wasn't really broadcasted, but he stood out for all the wrong reasons. I'm not just talking about a few defensive mistakes. I'm talking about five, six in the course of a 40-minute scrimmage there. And I think I even get a sense from the teammates' standpoint of there's a frustration there that maybe they think he's not taking things seriously enough, because we obviously saw Horvat go in on him, yell at him on the ice. And I do think that there is a sense of this squad is trying to pull together on the same rope, and it's their first postseason series in how many years? Five? From top down, from the GM to the coach to the players, they understand the stakes here. And for a player to not show up ready, I mean, Travis Green expressed in months before the restart happened and we were ready for camp that players would have to be ready to go from day one, right? This isn't a normal training camp. This isn't, you've got preseason to work yourself through and get into midseason form. You're straight into a do-or-die play-in series, and for Vertanen to not be ready, and quite simply, he just got outplayed in this competition. Like, that's really the story there, and that's why he's a scratch for game one. There is honestly, and again, we talk about him having all the tools, but quite honestly, there's no one for Vertanen to blame but himself for his exclusion from his likely exclusion from the game one lineup.
And just even while we talk about it here, Leaf hater Steve texts in 650-650. Can you imagine if Jake put it all together and gave 100% every game, every shift? He'd be a force. And it's almost like he's doing just enough to stay in the NHL. And look, there's obviously people that definitely believe in him. And well, even I admit, like, there's tools there. It's getting the most out of it. It feels like the perception change is as inconsistent and as volatile as his performances.
Absolutely. And it's really a reflection of his up and down play. I think when you saw him through the course of the first half of the season, you saw a player that was putting consistent play together a little bit more regularly. But the fact of the matter is, when you have a player, like, how many times are we going to have this conversation of if he can put it all together, right? Like, at a certain point, he's going to turn 24 years old this summer. Like, how long can you talk about if he can just hit a ceiling, if he can just work hard and work on his weaknesses? Like, at some point, he is what he is. And look, I have some sympathy for him in this situation. It obviously is really tough to have an offensive breakthrough campaign. And by all accounts, this was a good season for him. This was a step in the right direction. And for everything to change in a two-week training camp, I mean, again, the blame is on him, but it is a tough thing to wrap your head around. And look, the biggest question I have is, you look ahead to arbitration and the fact that he has rights. After the type of production he put together, like, he could have a case for $3 million. Now, to me, the question is the fact that this is another sign that he may be just not going to be that consistent middle six player. Is that going to affect his long-term future? Because the Canucks have to make a big decision on him this summer. They don't have a lot of cap space. They obviously have Tyler Toffoli, who is going to be one of their top priorities to sign on the right wing. I mean, you even look long-term, the right wing depth chart, you're going to have Vasily Podkolzin coming in at some point. You've got Cole in. This is going to be a big decision. The Canucks can't really kick the can further down the road on him. And this latest twist in the Jake Virtanen story is just another fuel to the fire to this big dilemma that they're going to face in the offseason as well.
When it comes to this series, Harm, there seems to be some fixation with Virtanen and that goal total. And we talk about 18 goals and if he'd been able to play a full season, breaking that 20 goal mark. And there seems to be, at least from the other side of the argument, that he should be in the lineup because he can score, even if he's not going to be playing in a top six role. When you look at the Canucks lineup, and we know there's a high expectation for the first line, there seems to be at least a pretty strong expectation for the Horvat line. And then the third line there is that wild card, and there's not a big expectation for the fourth line to score. And the hope is that they're just able to defend enough to not give up a bunch of goals. What's the tangible impact of losing the finishing ability and the goal scoring ability that the Canucks do have in Virtanen if he's not going to play?
Well, it's certainly detrimental, and it's why he's one of, on paper, one of Vancouver's top 12 forwards. You look at his production this season, again, he scored at a legitimate top six rate at even strength on a per hour basis. The issue as far as Virtanen is concerned is, as I see it, is if you're like, I've heard a lot of discussion of, well, let's swap out Sutter and throw Virtanen onto the fourth line. And while I can understand the perspective of fans that see it that way, the fact of the matter is when you put Virtanen next to Jay Beagle, he's not going to produce offensively. Like, playing with offensively inept line mates isn't going to, like, it nullifies that value that Virtanen brings to the table. I looked into it over the last 2 years. Virtanen skated 120 5-on-5 minutes with Beagle, and in that sample, he scored just 2 points. Like, that's a below fourth line rate. And it's not Virtanen's fault. He's playing alongside Jay Beagle and Tyler Mott, right? But it's important to keep in mind because, again, putting him on the fourth line in that checking role where they're going to get a lot of D-zone starts, that neutralizes, that takes away all of the positive value that you really garner from Virtanen in the lineup. So to me, for him to be effective and for him to be a positive contributor in this lineup, which he can be, and look, he can still factor into the series, it would have to be in that third line role next to Adam Gaudette and Antoine Roussel. Like, from my perspective, from my vantage point, his direct competition right now is Michael Ferland. And when you look at the Ferland situation, you've got to think that there's got to be a short leash on him too, right? Like, there's still, he had a better training camp than Virtanen, no question. But this is a player who still hasn't played a complete NHL game since October. Like, we really don't know what to expect of him. He's kind of a wild card, an X factor. If he has one or two quiet games, and you know you have the offensive punch of Virtanen waiting in the wings, you've got to think that there's got to be a short leash there. And so to me, again, when you talk about the tangible impact of his scoring utility, it would have to be in that third line role because you're not going to get that same value if you just throw him next to Beagle in a checking role.
Yeah, I agree. And Ferland's the guy that, let's keep talking about him because it's been really positive the last week or so. His performance at camp, the way that he sort of grew into that tune-up game. You're right, there's got to be some degree of precaution in putting him in the lineup and assuming that he's going to be there for the long haul. But what did you see from him through camp and even the first game against the Jets?
He honestly surprised me in a really good way. I to be perfectly honest with you, especially the fact that he missed the first scrimmage. He wasn't on ice on the first day of camp with the main group. I figured he was behind the eight ball, and it was tough for me to envision him getting up to speed that quickly. But that's how well he performed over the last couple of scrimmages there. I mean, he was especially in that last one. You could tell he was up to speed. The skating was there. He was more than anything, he was a real nuisance to play against for defensemen. He was hunting pucks down in every area of the ice, throwing his weight around, winning a lot of puck battles. Obviously had a couple of goals there. Against Winnipeg, it was, I mean, all things considered, again, you kind of have to grade Ferland on a curve, given that he's missed so much action. So it was a pretty quiet night for him, but the fact that, again, his feet were moving well, and I don't think that third line had a great game necessarily, but I thought he looked okay. So to me, that was certainly a positive step in the right direction. Now it's just whether can he build on that and be a force against Minnesota. I honestly don't know, right? Like that, again, that's still up in the air. But no question, he exceeded all expectations I had through camp. And he looked, I mean, again, just the fact that he made it through that Winnipeg game is a really good sign for him, both in the short and long term.
Armin Dial of The Athletic Vancouver joining us, writes extensively on the Canucks. And, you know, as we get ready for this series, Harbin, I was making the point earlier to Dwayne Roloson. It just, yeah, there's been some concern over experience from the top guys, Pedersen, Hughes, Besser, and all that. But, you know, it's to me, it's more of an emotional bandwidth question of can they handle the moment when in times of peril, are you able to stay focused? As far as talent and as far as physical capabilities, these guys are totally equipped to handle this moment. As far as the numbers go, like, does the talent favor Vancouver in this series?
Well, on paper, it's an incredibly close matchup. Obviously, the way that the Canucks and Wild draw that value, I mean, they're almost polar opposites, right? Like you in Vancouver, again, very, very top heavy. And it's a question of can that top end talent carry a bottom end of a roster that is kind of it's kind of held together by Gorilla Glue. And in Minnesota, they don't have the game breaking talent that Vancouver has. Right, like at every position, whether it's up front offensively in goal. I mean, you can even make an argument for as excellent and how much better Minnesota's blue line is compared to Vancouver's. Canucks might have the best defenseman in the entire series in Quinn Hughes. So there's no question that the Canucks have that advantage in terms of elite talent. But again, Minnesota has really strong depth up and down that lineup. I mean, you've got guys like Ryan Donato, Alex Galchenyuk in that bottom six that can create a lot of offense. I mean, think about it this way. When Minnesota's top two centers were off the ice, the Wild were +8 in even strength goal differential. Like, they didn't just hold their own. They were really, really good at 5-on-5 no matter who was on the ice. And, of course, for them, they obviously also have a really good blue line, top 10 power play as well, which I think is a bit of an underrated storyline. Of course, though, the biggest mismatch is in goal, right? Like in Alex Stalock and Devan Dubnyk, worst goaltending tandem in the league, arguably. And then the Canucks, of course, have Jacob Markstrom, their team MVP. So I think once you balance it all out, it's about as even as it gets on paper. I personally, though, I mean, you talk about experience. I think this entire playing series is going to be a little bit different because of the entire layoff, right? And I think when you look at Pedersen, Hughes, Besser, I mean, Vancouver's best players are younger, they're quicker, and because of that, I just think that they have an opportunity here to come out of the gate along a lot stronger than maybe some of the veterans that the Wild have. And for that reason, I think that may nullify the lack of playoff experience. And I think just when you have the goaltending and elite talent advantage up your sleeve, if all else is equal, I tend to favor that. So I think Vancouver has a slight edge, but no question on paper, it's really tight.
What are you expecting to see from Travis Green, Harm, in terms of the matchups that he's looking for out of this series? We know that he's a guy that during the regular season when he's been the Canucks coach has hunted certain matchups, has tried to get certain lines, some softer minutes. He's definitely been a guy that's used the matchup line at times. What are your expectations for the Canucks and the way that Green wants the matchup with Minnesota?
Yeah, I don't get the sense that Green's going to want to go best on best. So I think what you'll see is the Horvat line will probably draw the Eric Staal matchup. And I guess the rationale behind that would be, I mean, in Eric Staal, you have this 6'4", I don't know how heavy he is, probably 220, 230-pound beast, this playoff grizzly veteran. I think you'd much rather have Horvat and Besser. And I still think when you compare those two lines, I still think, especially when you have Besser on that line, going the way he is, like, I still think that the Canucks have the upper hand in that matchup. And then I think from Green's perspective, that can maybe allow the Pettersson line, as you've seen so often through the course of the season, kind of feast on that secondary matchup, which in Minnesota's case would be the Joel Eriksson-Ek line. Look, that Eriksson-Ek line, they're not going to create much of anything offensively. That's a hardcore checking line, and Eriksson-Ek has quietly been one of the league's best shutdown centers. So that would be the secondary matchup to expect. Well, obviously, on the back end, expect Quinn Hughes and Chris Tanev to face the Fiala Staal line. Other than that, I'm going to be really curious to see how Adam Gaudette is deployed. And specifically, I mean, we reference that Gaudette, Roussel, Ferland unit as the quote-unquote third line, but I really do wonder if Green is going to trust them enough defensively, knowing how strong Minnesota's bottom six is. I mean, even you look down the stretch, and I was curious about this, and I looked into it, of Vancouver's final seven games before the shutdown, the Gaudette line actually skated fewer minutes than the Beagle one. Right, so I don't think that it's necessarily in that bottom six going to be a third line, fourth line sort of hierarchy. I think with the bottom six, it's kind of two equal lines that are going to be deployed situationally, right? Like if the Canucks are down a goal, expect obviously the Gaudette line to get more minutes. But if the Canucks are up in a game, I'm curious to see just how much ice Gaudette sees, especially because we know that JT Miller or Horvat could take a lot of the D-zone starts for Gaudette, even when Roussel and Ferland are on the ice. So that's going to be, I'm curious to see how much ice the bottom six sees, but quite honestly, and we saw it again against Winnipeg, there's such a huge drop-off between the top six and the bottom six that I think Green is going to have to rely heavily on that top six. Like, I'd expect, or I'd hope, if I'm Vancouver, that Pettersson's line is playing more than 20 minutes. Horvat's line is going to have to play a lot because that bottom six is a huge Achilles heel, and that's where the Wild have a distinct competitive advantage.
We're going a bit heavy here, but I do want to follow up on something you just said there about Gaudette. Can a healthy Roussel and this reinvigorated Michael Ferland kind of stabilize that defensive performance? Are they capable enough to float Gaudette's defensive deficiencies?
I think Roussel can. He's shown it over the course of, I mean, obviously this season was different coming off of that ACL injury, but in years past, he's had a sterling two-way profile. And even over the course of the last 20 games, quietly, he led Canucks skaters in expected goal differential. So I think Roussel really helps. I like that duo between Gaudette and Roussel. Ferland, the thing about him is he's never really been a good two-way player. Like, if you look over the course of the season, even when he was healthy in the first month of the season, his defensive impact was definitively below average. So even with Roussel factored into the equation, you have in Gaudette and Ferland two below-average defensive players, and that's really where I think Travis Green is going to maybe have some reservations with that line.
Finally, really quickly here, are you a prediction guy? You got a prediction on the series?
Sure. Yeah, I'll take the Canucks in five. Again, I'm a big fan of When things are so close, I think the Canucks in Pettersson, in Hughes, in Markstrom, they have players that can single-handedly take over games. And again, the goaltending edge is just so substantial that I think all else being equal, I think those edges could be decisive.
He is Harmon Dial at Harmon Dial 2, D-A-Y-A-L. So when the Canucks don't win in five, you can at him on Twitter. Also, you should just follow him and read his work at The Athletic in Vancouver. Harmon, thank you very much. Looking forward to Sunday, man.
Thanks, guys.